Snippet before our task is get started, out of a retro from last week, we talked about, somebody mentioned the good old days. Has everybody had a chance to read your spiritual sword? Anybody? Michael? You ladies? Anybody had a chance? I believe the elders give this to the church for free. This particular order, documentary about Brother N.B. Hardiman. Anybody know who N.B. Hardiman is? Anybody don't know who N.B. Hardiman is? Okay. N.B. Hardiman was born in 1874, and he died in 1950s, I believe it was, something like that. And Brother N.B. Hardiman, along with Brother A.G. Freed, started the school. Brother A.G. Freed started it, and Brother Hardiman came in. And that's what we have today as Freed Hardiman University. Brother Hardiman was a staunch gospel defender of the truth. He was one who, through the split with the Disciples of Christ, the Christian church, and so on, stood firm for the truth. This particular article, periodical this month, deals a lot with his life, his lessons, and the things that he did. So if you don't have one, borrow it from somebody. It is well worth your reading, I promise you. You'll get a lot of encouragement from it. Going back to the old paths is what Brother Hardiman would do. Just a little information. Anybody in here ever heard, I know some of you have, the Hardiman Tabernacle Sermons? Heard of those, I'm sure. It was, and I can't remember, several nights. Every night, the first night, I believe, they were held in Nashville in the Ryman Auditorium. And this was back in the 1920s. And they had 6,000 in attendance in the city, in the Ryman Auditorium. And they turned away 2,000. So, you know, the gospel was being preached back then. And, you know, it's a great periodical. Right? That's, I just want to mention that when we were talking about the good old days. It'd be well worth your reading if you want to take time to do it. All right. Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, chapter 7, in verse number 9, where I believe we're going to, no, I'm sorry, verse number 14 is where we're going to start tonight. In verse 14 of Ecclesiastes 7, it reads as follows. In the day of prosperity, joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out the thing that will come after him. Part of the passage, in the day of prosperity, be joyful, but day of adversity, consider. What do you think Solomon is saying here? Verse 14. The day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. What is prosperity? We know what it means, right? What's the opposite of prosperity? Adversity. Okay? So what's he saying in this verse? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. What? What do you mean? Okay. Learn from your adversity, because we all have them. What do you think Solomon is trying to teach us from these two? He's getting parallel. But what do you think he's trying to teach us in this passage? Or God? Chuck? Okay. All right. I think that's exactly right. God has given us, okay, as humanity, God has given us the fall of man, our highs and lows, okay? He's given us the good days. He's given us, we do have bad days. God has given us a balanced life. Now, what do you mean? He's given us a balanced life. If you think as a Christian, and just because you become a Christian, that you're going to live on the all the time, that's just a false mentality. We are a mountain sometimes, and we are in the valley sometimes, and sometimes we're just in the middle, right? Things just go along as they do. There are peaks and there are valleys in our life as Christians. So what should we do? What should we do? How should we act? Like Brother Chuck said, don't get too excited when the days are good. I mean, why? Why don't get all excited when the good days are here? Because bad's not going to be far behind. Okay? That's true. That's the way life is. Somebody turn to Job 2, verse 10. And while you're turning to that, God sent adversities to Job. And one of his worst critics beside his three friends was who? His wife. Okay? Now, Job was told by his wife to do what? Curse God and die. All right? Now, Job makes a profound statement that kind of goes along on what Solomon is in Job chapter 2 and verse number 10. Now, listen, and Job was the one who had the right to not be too joyous and in prosperity and not too, you know, down when things are bad. What does he say in Job 2 verse 10? Somebody read it. Okay, go ahead. So what was he saying? What was he saying to his wife? You speak one of the foolish women, okay? Shall we receive good at the hand of God and receive evil, you know, be happy when things are good and curse God when things are bad? Is that what we're to do, Job said? Now, we can get into a discussion here, okay? And I don't want to go into it, but it's just worth, I think it's worth mentioning. You know, there's a couple of passages in Job. If we're not careful, we get the wrong meaning from what Job is trying to say. Job says a lot of things from emotional thoughts, okay? It just shows through inspiration how men are vulnerable and how men think sometimes. And he says, shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we also receive evil at the hand of God? Is that a true statement? Is that a true statement? Job also says, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Is that a true statement? Okay, he allows. Sometimes people take it to the extreme in the sense that they say that God brought evil on Job. He certainly didn't. God just allowed that to happen. Does God send evil to us today? How do I know that? Okay, so how can God send evil if he's not tempted with it? But James makes a statement. What does James say? Every good and perfect gift is from above. That's what James says. So therefore, God can't send evil because there is no evil in God. In my judgment, Job was just saying this from a human standpoint. You know, from his human reasoning, because certainly God doesn't send evil. God doesn't take children away. You heard parents maybe say, why did God take my child away? Did God take children away from their parents? Why do children die? Okay. But why that's true, but why do children die? Yeah. And we're going to get it. Solomon says that in Ecclesiastes. But why do children die? What's another thought? Why do children die? Huh? It's our life. That's a lot, okay? Just because you're a child doesn't mean you're not going to die. God has set certain things in motion, okay? The natural law. And it's natural sometimes just children are going to die. Is it fair? As I see it, is it unfair for a little baby to die? Well, you know, that seems terrible, Did God send it? Well, certainly not. But as we see it, that's a terrible thing, and it is a terrible thing. That's it. See, that you got it at me, Jeremy. But that's exactly right. No, that's great. Jeremy's exactly right. Where do they go when they die? Exactly. So would a child want to come back here? And I know we've had a lot of faithful men, women who passed away. And I think funerals and stuff are for us because, you know, we don't want our family. That's normal. And I'm not saying it's not normal. But if you have a godly man or a godly woman who's living for God all the day of their life, and they leave this life, and I wish I could see my dad, my wife, those people wouldn't want to come back here. If they had a choice, they wouldn't want to come back here. So God doesn't send evil. God sends good. So I think what Solomon is saying here, we understand, and if I think we get it in our minds, that don't be overexcited when there's good days, because the bad days are going to come. Right. Okay. Why do people, when they're doing good, Andrew, why do people have a false sense of security? Where is the security? In possessions that they have, okay? And can come and go as soon as, they can go as soon as they come. So, which is easier? To be faithful when things are going good, or be faithful when things are hard? Which is easier? I'm not saying lie or lie. Which is easier, to be faithful when things are going good or when things are going bad? Okay. Yes. Yes. And we talked about this quick question. Do we learn more at a party or do we learn more at a funeral? We learn more in adversity, okay? So we really grow when things are hard. We don't really grow when things are easy. So I think Jeremy's right. It depends. I think we can grow when things are good and then when things are difficult, okay? We can grow in both areas or what? We can be unfaithful in both areas. When things are good, because we trust in ourselves, and when things are bad, what do people sometimes say? Things are bad, what is their first thought? Why did God let this happen? Why is God let it happen? May we never, and we maybe we've all been guilty of this. We maybe have been. Let's try not to get to the point where we say, why does God let this happen? Well, instead of saying, why does God let this happen, why can't we say, and this is difficult and hard, and I'm not saying I'm there, but why can't we say, thank you, Lord, for the adversities, because I know you're there with me. Does it seem like God's close when things are difficult, or God's further away? Which? What? Okay, and I think it goes back to what John said, okay? Yes. Right. Well, maybe God's allowing it. He doesn't make it happen. Right. But the point is he's letting it happen because he knows what? There are areas in my life I need to grow. And this will either make me weaker or make me stronger. Okay? So that's the part that Solomon is trying to get us to see in chapter 7. Yes. Go ahead, Brian. I'm sorry. Right. I agree. I think it's a good point. Everybody hear that? Sometimes our problems are created by our own self. And who do we blame? Well, we can either blame somebody else, or as Brian said, look at ourselves in the mirror and say, hey, that was my fault. That's my problem. I messed up, okay? That takes a lot of courage, and I think that the first step to grow is when we quit blaming others for our problems, and we start looking at ourselves and saying, hey, maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I need to work on some things, okay? Good boy. Anybody else? All right. Verse number 15. This is one that, you know, but we dealt with for many, 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 many years. Verse 15 says, there is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there's a wicked man who prolongs life in his wickedness. What does that mean? That very well could be, you know. I mean, we don't know the providence of God, but we know that Peter says that God is not suffering. We do know that. But I think that's exactly right. Why do the wicked prosper and the righteous suffer? Why? Why does that happen? Where's Jeremy at? Okay. Excellent answer. Expound on that, brother, if you would. Yeah, that's a great answer. A great answer. It's on your definition of prosperity. Okay. How many, raise your hand. How many people in here were raised in the church? Raise your hand. How many people were converted maybe out of denominationalism or out of any nothing? How many people? Here's another question. And this isn't a blanket statement. Who do you think is more grateful, those who were raised in the church or those who were brought out of denomination? Would everybody kind of agree with that? To a degree. That's not a blanket statement, okay? We take it sometimes as a rite of passage in the sense that I was raised in the church and I got the truth, and you know, and sometimes I think, and I guess we all may be guilty of this, we have the truth, and there are people in this world that are dying by the dozens who are lost, who don't have the truth. And sometimes we take it granted in the sense that, and again, this isn't a blanket statement, but sometimes we get kind of lackadaisical. You know, we've got truth, and it might be a rite of passage. But what an honor it is for those of us who were raised in church. And you can have problems with that as well. And that brings up another point. Why am I a member of the Lord's church? Am I a member of the Lord's church because my mom and daddy were a member of the Lord's church? Do I know as a Christian why I'm a member of the Lord's church? Those of you who are members of the church, have you ever been asked that? You're a member of the church of Christ because your mom and daddy's. Anybody ever been questioned whether I have? Well, you're just a member of the church of Christ because your dad was there. That could be the furthest from the truth. we can be no different than denominational people whose parents were raised from generation to generation. We can be like that in the church as well, can't we? Can't we be like that? Because we follow what mom and dad says, and that's, you know, we don't question anything. We need to question. We need to know. We need to know that we have our own faith. What does that mean? What does it mean that I don't have my mom and daddy's faith? I have my own faith. You know what that means? Okay. Okay, right. Yes. Right. And you have your own faith, not because of your mom and dad, but you've studied it yourself, and that's your faith. Okay? So I think we need to be careful of that. I won't read it, but to me, through my studies, the greatest answer to that question, why do the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper? I'm not going to read this, but I'd encourage you to go to the book of Psalms, and you can read this as maybe part of a daily Bible reading if you want to. Read it tonight when you get home. In Psalms chapter 93, beginning in verse number 1. I'm sorry. Not 93, 73. I'm sorry. Psalm 73. Begin in verse 1 and go through about verse number 17. Read that when you get home. And to me, that's the greatest answer why the righteous suffer and the unrighteous prosper. Okay? The psalmist dealt with that. Okay? And he read all of that. I'm not going to tell you how it ends, but read that, and that helps us understand why the wicked prosper, as we see it sometimes. Okay? Verse 17 is the key. Look also, verse number 15. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 15. Now this could be a stumper, if you will. Verse number 16, I'm sorry. When you read this the first time, you might think, well, that just don't make sense. But you can read it two or three times, and then it could possibly make better sense. Solomon says, do not be overly righteous, nor be overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Don't be overly righteous or overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? What is Solomon saying here? Is he saying, don't be so good and don't be so righteous? Is that what he's saying? Don't be overly righteous. Does that mean he's saying, well, now I can mix a little sin with good bit of righteousness? Is what he's saying? Don't be what we used to call people, you know, or people who's called you or a goody two shoes. What do you think he means? Don't be overly righteous. Ah, right. That's Brother Chuck. Okay. Or excessive. Anybody else got another? What King James say? Conceited. Okay. I think that clarifies it. All right. Don't be overly righteous. I think Lori said it in a good way. In other words, don't be overly righteous as far as being pious. Go ahead, Amber. Yes. It's the mentality of don't be pious. Don't be pharisaical. Okay? Like the Pharisee and the publican. All right? Don't be haughty. Don't be high-minded. Don't think, let's not think of ourselves, as Paul said, more highly than we ought to think. But to think what? Soberly. We're to think of ourselves in such a way, if I realize And we all realize where we came from and what God has brought us to. If we really get it in our minds where we were and what God brought us to, how in the world can we know it? How can we? Nobody has the right to be haughty. And I begin to realize where I was and where I am. We can't be haughty because it all depended on God. I didn't do anything. You do anything. There's not a single one of us that died for our own self to have our sins forgiven. So none of us have the right to be haughty or high-minded or I'm so far above everybody else. We don't. That's just wrong. Okay, Brother Craig. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, we may make a statement, and I'm sure we've all made a statement. I know a biblical character who made this statement. Lord, I would never do that. Who did that? Peter. That's dangerous. Lord, I would never do that. We may think of ourselves that good. That's a real dangerous statement to make. Really is. But, on the other hand, let's look at the other extreme. There's a difference between being pious and Pharisaical, haughty and high-minded, than one who has confidence. What's the difference? Can I not know? And I'm not going to... But I would, but I don't want to ask this question. I want to ask this question, and you answer within your own self. You don't have to raise your hand. Right now, if the Lord comes back in 3 minutes, does everyone here know for a fact that you're lost or saved? Can I know right now, without a shadow of a doubt, that I'm saved? If you can't say yes to that question, you better consider your spiritual condition. That's not, is that being haughty? No. That's being confident. Confident in what? Self? Am I confident in myself? What am I confident in? Amber? Okay, but let's expound on that. Not just God, but I'm confident in what of God? That's the key. I'm confident in the promises of God. Because God's told me, He said, if you do this, and you're faithful and you're walking in the light and so on and so forth, God says in 1 John 5 and verse 13, that you may know that you have eternal life. You may know you have eternal life. Folks need to know. We don't need to guess. Christianity is not a, do you think you're going to heaven? Well, I hope. No. That's not Christianity. Christianity is, you going to heaven? Jeremy said, yes. Now, does that mean you're perfect? No. But that means you're obedient, 1 John 1, you're walking in light. And that means that God's grace will take care of our imperfection. If you know that you know. Here's another question. And this is something I think a lot of Christians deal with, and I want to talk for just a minute. Scenario. Is the Christian life like sin? Say for an example, 1 John 1, 6 through 9. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. But if we what? Walk in the light as He is in light, We have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Christ does what? Continually cleanses us from all sins, okay? If we're walking in the light, okay? That means we're faithful. Question. If I'm going down the road and I'm faithful to God and my life is pure and I'm going, maybe you've heard this scenario before, and all of a sudden I think one bad thought, in a second I think that bad thought, somebody hits me and kills me, and I'm going to hell. No, sir. No, sir. So often we have the mentality that Christianity is I'm in the light one second and I'm out of the light the next second. Folks, that is not Christianity. Would you agree? If that be true, then I'm going to have to be praying. Have you ever heard anybody say, I hope I die with a prayer on my lips? That's not Christianity. Now, we, you know, 1 John, Hebrews 10, verse 26 says, if we sin, what? Willfully, there remain no more sacrifice for sin. So to think that I have to die perfect before God, now, to correct that, that's not means willfully, but through weakness. Folks, that's a miserable life. I'm not in Christianity 1 minute, and then 2 seconds down the road, I'm out of it because of being a human being. That's not Christianity. Okay? Christianity is walking in the light, and God's blood, Christ's blood, can cleanse us. Adam, do you have a thought? That's a good question. Let me ask you a question. Let me answer Adam's question with a question. Am I worthy to partake of the Lord's Supper? Am I worthy? What's that? Okay, but am I worthy to partake of this supper on the Lord's day? Yes. Why, Brian? Exactly. Paul says in 1 Corinthians, whosoever drinks, eateth and drinks in what? An unworthy man. Okay? So I can partake of this supper worthily. Not because I'm worthy. Who made me worthy to partake of this supper? Christ did. Okay? So yes, the answer to Adam's question is I'm worthy. Not of my own merit or my own things, but I'm worthy because he made me worthy. Okay? That's why I take of it with joy. Okay? Thoughts. Now I want to get to the opposite, verse number 17. Do not be overly wicked, nor be foolish. Why should you die before your time? What do you think it means like that? Is he saying here that we can dabble in sin? You know, in 1 Titus 1 or 2 Timothy 3, it talks about a deacon and an elder. You know what I mean there? He says, an elder is not to be given to one wife, but a deacon is not to be, can much wine. Yeah. Okay. So what they're saying is you, a deacon can drink a little bit, and an elder can't drink at all. That ain't what he's saying. Okay. Solomon says here, don't be overly, don't be overly wicked, nor be foolish. Well, he's not saying to doubt we can't dabble in sin, okay, because we know that's wrong. So what do you think he's saying here? Don't be okay. Okay. That's true. Somebody turn right quick to Proverbs chapter 14, I think it is. Yes. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 9. Proverbs 14, verse 9. Whoever gets it, if they would.
Fools mock and
So Solomon says, fools mock at sin. What does that mean? They mock at sin. Okay. So, all right. They don't take it seriously. Okay? They take it lightly. Fools mock at sin. They don't realize the seriousness and the consequences of sin. Fools mock at sin. That's what Solomon is saying. Don't be overly wicked. Don't be so foolish to mock sin and to think sin is just something to be taken lightly, because sin is a deadly serpent. Sin will kill us. And that's why Solomon says, don't be overly wicked. Don't mock at sin. Don't take sin lightly. You know, we think sometimes and we think, oh, well, that ain't that bad. I missed a service. I went fishing. Oh, well, that ain't that bad. You know, I whatever, you know. We get to the point where we think that sin isn't as bad as we think it is, or the preacher or the elder, they say it is, we're in trouble. Don't mock sin. Paul says in Galatians 6, 7 and 8, what does he say? Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Finish it, somebody. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also sow reap. And there's one thing about sin. One thing about sin that fools don't mock. Reaping is always greater than the sowing. Is that right? You understand what I mean? The reaping is always greater than the sowing. You sow an ear of corn, you're going to get a whole stalk of corn. You sow a tomato seed, you're going to get a whole vine of tomatoes. Okay? I was talking to a guy at work the other day, and was talking about this. And I told him, and I tried to help him understand. I said, man, mate, you make mistakes. You know, everybody sins and falls short. But you know, you reach your soul. And you start hanging around. It was Andre at Turning Point. I said, did you hang around with bad people? I said, you end up just like them. That's mocking sin. No, that ain't going to affect me. You know, I'm too righteous for sin to bother me. No. Peter was one of the apostles of Christ. He didn't teach me. I don't know how long he spent in the garden or in surrounding with those three people. But it didn't take him long to die as the Son of God. He was an apostle. So if he can do that, I guarantee I can do it too. So that's the point I think Solomon is trying. Don't mock sin, because sin will literally destroy our lives. Let's don't get comfortable with it. Don't cuddle around it. You know, sometimes, and perhaps we're all guilty, you have over here is one extreme, as far away from sin as we can go. Then you have the sinning line. You know what I'm just being facetious. But you have the sinning line, and sometimes we try to get so close without going over it. We should be on the other side. We should not see how close we can get to falling away, because that edge is a lot closer than we think it is. And please, I like Jeremy talked about in his lessons, and he did a good job. Let's please don't try that mentality. It'll eat us up. It will destroy us. Sin doesn't work overnight. Sin takes time. People don't fall away from church overnight. It's a process. It's the way sin is. If I never step in it, I'll never have to worry about it. So don't be overly wicked, Solomon says, okay? I think we're time's up. Yes, sir, bro. Yes. Go ahead.
That's just really what we're trying to do.
Yeah. And that's very dangerous, because understand, we need to stay away from it as far as we can. I mean, we don't need to try the mentality of getting as close as we can. We need to stay away from it as far as we can. Even if it looks bad, we need to stay away from it. Okay, I want to read this verse right quick, Steve. Give me about 30 seconds. I want to read this next week, and I want y'all to think about this verse right here. Verse number 21. Also, do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cussing or cursing you. We're going to talk about that next week. And not only 21, for many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed. We're going to talk about that next week, okay? Thank y'all.
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road Congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.